Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Monday. It's July 26th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And we've got a full schedule for you today. We're going to start off with John Bailey, the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. He'll be on from 10 to 10:30. And then we'll be joined by Michael Edelman, Esquire. He's political analyst and pundit, national political analyst and pundit. And we'll be talking to him about a panoply of issues and concerns. He'll be on from 10:30 to 11. And then I checked again with Ron Matten. He was going to be on at 11 rather than 11:30. So Ron Matten, he's the endorsed Republican candidate vying to serve as Yonkers' next city council president. And he'll be on at 11 o'clock, and then I'll follow afterwards. And I see Mr. Bailey's already on the line, so we'll say hello. Good morning, Mr. Bailey. How are you, sir?
Good morning from White Plains in New York, USA.
Well, you know, I always look forward to Monday, especially with you, because you start the week, and there's always something to talk about, which always makes it very, very exciting. So, you know, there are a couple of issues that came into play, and people can get a greater extrapolation of what you were talking about, even on your own website, the White Plains Citizenet Reporter .com or WPCNR.com. One thing that is the most compelling, and I thought that we would rise above it at this point, but we haven't, and that's the coronavirus cases. They're increasing exponentially. As you pointed out in your article, it's the Delta virus right now, and I only read, I think it was yesterday, that there's another variant that's called Lambda, and they expect that to be even more virulent than the Delta. So what can you tell us about that? Because you're the only person that I know locally, and probably also even in New York, that is really covering the cases as well as you do, because you mentioned the numbers. You mentioned all these issues that come into play.
Well, the numbers are rising, and they have risen every week since July 5th, our big hot 3-day holiday weekend. And to show you how much, they went from 111 new cases on the end of July the 9th, okay, to 777 through July 24th. It is the number of new infections has gone up 7 times in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And is anybody emphasizing the 777 figure, which is only obtained by adding up the daily figures? If you add up the daily figures, it staggers you. And that's what I've been doing because I wanted to do a comparison. It is not enough to say, as some officials are, is that we are down from when we are at our highest. Well, you are now substantially up from your lowest.
Correct. And
this is
what's really important.
That's what's really important. And it is amazing to me that in his message yesterday, where Governor Cuomo sent out his paragraph, it was the same paragraph as he sent out last week at about this time, urging our only answer is vaccination. No, it's not the only answer. The only answer is to give penalties, as you mentioned before you went on the air, for not getting vaccinated.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing don't comprehend. We're not an authoritarian government. We're not like China, and we can outlaw people walking the streets or being forced to stay at home and to only travel at certain hours of the day, and all these sort of things that are just, you know, anathema to the American, I guess, freedoms that we enjoy. Europe, for example, is now demanding that, like in France particularly, they want everybody to wear the masks now. They want you to prove that you're inoculated and And so therefore it's unlikely that you'll be infected, even though some people can have been infected and gotten over the COVID and now getting infected again. Remember, that's what happened with the Yankees. There were, I think, seven of them that caught it, but that they were all inoculated. So it can happen. But what I don't understand is how come we don't impose such restrictions here? Is anyone's rights going to be taken away from them? And even if we do take away some rights from people who don't want to wear a mask, who don't want to get inoculated, do they have a right to cause harm to other people who have done the best that they can, the best practice that we know of, getting inoculated?
No, they're a threat. They're a threat to other people's safety, and they need to be inoculated.
You wouldn't know, and neither would I. I mean, we're not in government to tell them what to do. It seems like a logical move.
If the government doesn't want to do something, it is in their self-interest not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is always in their self-interest. And if you start closing down again and preventing public gatherings and concerts, for God's sake, or allowing people to go to the theater without proof of vaccination, for example, I mean, you're just asking for it because the tourists are going to come in again. You're asking for it.
We're asking for what?
You are asking
if you want to go
to
a Broadway show, you need to be inoculated. Is that a problem?
Yes.
Don't buy your tickets.
We do need to be. They have to show proof of inoculation when they order the tickets and also when they go in the door.
Correct.
That's what they need to do.
You can't just go in without being retested. Now, wherever you go, in so many places, they take your temperature before you're even allowed to enter a bank, before you're allowed to go anywhere, the libraries.
That's another intriguing point. Where are these tests that the county particularly is administering daily? Where are they being conducted, at testing centers or by organizations that are allowing people into their establishments? I mean, I just don't know. But that would
I don't
be
know myself.
Interesting. If they are being, if the testing results are coming from people going to restaurants and various other places that are open now, that's important because it would mean that people are really spreading the virus in those establishments. Perhaps that's why they don't tell us. You know?
Uh-huh. That's a very interesting perspective. I did look at something else as a corollary to this issue, you know, with the coronavirus and the cases increasing and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I noticed that there was a guy by the name of Rick Dennison. He's a Minnesota Vikings assistant coach. And he was relieved of his position, and that was said by ESPN, because he refused to wear a mask, and he wasn't inoculated. And that's part of the discussion. Are our sports figures demanded to have a standard protocol? And why don't they? And why is this coach permitted to even be there?
Well, number one, the team pays Mr. Erickson. If they don't want him to work without a mask, if they don't want him to work without wearing a mask, fire him. I think they're perfectly within their rights. And since when are organizations, professional organizations, allowed to not do what they want? I mean, we gave corporations and airlines particularly billions of dollars in aid so that they wouldn't go under. And what did they do?
Yeah.
They fired a lot of people, which they weren't supposed to do. And we're not holding them accountable, are we? We're just letting them do that. We give them money to keep to stay open and keep people employed, and they fire them anyway, so they look good to Wall Street.
Yeah.
It's just not to be believed. It's crap.
It really doesn't.
Yes.
And then
no.
What do we do, even if the viruses don't become even more virulent? It does look like we're not doing the best that we can. Economy open, or is that going to be a non-event? It won't be able to open. Because if we have more cases, what do we do?
That's another big government question, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
We have to face that in New York State. New York State's government, which has been most proactive in protecting its citizens, have taken a completely different turn. Nobody's talking about protecting the citizens from this obvious spread. It's obvious.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really
is. Despite the New York Times' very national view about talking about the spread, they have written very little about the spread in New York. Very little.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand why that is. Because they have much more access because of their name than local media here in Westchester County. And so they pick and choose whatever seems to fit them, but they're not really doing the news. You know,
well,
it's really amazing.
The Times wants to have it both ways. They want New York to recover, and they don't want to do anything to prevent it from the city from reopening and getting an economy going. But on the other hand, you have to report the fact that the virus has now retaken the initiative in the last 3 weeks. Since July.
You know what I don't?
Now, since July 1st.
What I don't understand is there are a lot of programs in which the government is helping people cope. For some people it's not enough financially, for other people it is. Whatever it is. But there are people who get unemployment insurance now.
Yes.
Why,
not stopping,
why are they
that?
Getting... No, they're not stopping that. But why are they getting these stipends from the unemployment insurance without proving that they're inoculated? Who
what
is deciding these policies?
What a
brilliant... Yeah, well...
Because not getting inoculated prevents them from being hired.
That's another issue, of course. You're quite astute about that, too.
Yes.
So
the thinking is not here. The thinking is not here.
No, there's no thinking. There's no thinking. And that's the problem.
They just don't want to aggravate people. We are now in political season where no politician wants to not be liked by the citizens for what he or she advocates. And it'll get worse next year because of the election.
What I don't understand is the issue is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it. Nobody promoted COVID to come about. It happened. Maybe some places are at fault for whatever reason. I'm sure they didn't. I'm not sure about anything because I don't know who to believe one way or the other. I don't know if the Chinese made a mistake. Because I think it did originate there. And but whatever the case is, it's here. And it doesn't matter who's at fault at this point, is it? So how come we don't have mechanisms in place to simply say, okay, politicians, if you don't want to talk with one voice, I mean, if you don't want to talk individually, then why don't you have a spokesperson, not anyone in elected office, but just a spokesperson, to speak for the U.S. Senate, another one to speak for the U.S. Congress, so nobody could blame anybody. These are individuals just for this purpose, so nobody can take the blame.
Right. That would be you.
And they're probably not going to be hurt.
I hope no politicians in Congress have heard of this. I hope they are not listening, because that will be a disaster. What happens at the presidential news conferences, they have some handsome or beautiful face come out and handle questions.
Yes.
And, oh, we'll have to see. We'll get back to you in that, blah, blah, blah. You never get any information. It chews up time. It becomes basically spun news. That's what a press conference has turned into. And so if Congress, if, say, you had somebody speaking for the Senate instead of the Chuck Schumer, and if you had somebody speaking for the House instead of Nancy Pelosi, you would have a very bland reaction. No, the Senate has declined to handle this because it'll be like a Supreme Court type decision. And that would be a disaster. However, that would be very smart because then, as you pointed out, no individual congressman or senator could make hay with a with a partisan statement.
Yeah, or we could even have two people for each one of these houses, either the Congress or the House of Representatives, where you have a Republican speaker and you have a Democratic speaker, and they should both answer the same question.
Yes, you are basically a frustrated autocrat, Izzy.
Yeah, well,
you have just come up with another brilliant
autocrat
idea. You've come up with another brilliant idea for destroying the truth.
Well, what I'm hoping for is a solution that will make people comfortable and not take it out on the politicians who really aren't responsible for the outcome, but they should vote on a resolution of some sort. So they should be, I guess, like a best practice. And then if you're not going to practice, then maybe you shouldn't get covered for a lot of these things. You know, there are limits. This government is giving a tremendous amount of money out to get everything started again, and it's worked in many places, and in other places it hasn't. But that's because people are not paying attention to the best practice. There's some states in the United States, which is amazing, they have such unbelievable numbers, and I don't see anybody crying out and say, hey, what are we going to do here? There should be one
policy. We're just letting them stew. They're just letting them stew. I mean, and the other issue that I think they'll be covering in quite a lot in depth in the next couple of weeks is the way the medical personnel across the country is being swamped with new cases.
Yes.
Not happening in New York yet, but it will.
But it will.
Yeah, it will. I mean, 777 new cases a week. No, in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
In this area alone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think they were going to open up. There's so much infection out of the United States that Canada won't even let our people across the border.
Well, we'll have it under control. I think they relaxed that.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Okay.
But, I wonder. I mean, I think you have to have a vaccination to get across the border.
Yeah,
I think so.
That's
what they did.
What about the other issue about the southern border, where we have people from South America, Central America, from Asia, from Africa, that traverse through South America and eventually come across the border? Are they inoculated? Mm-hmm. What do we do if they come across the border?
How can they be? They don't have a lot of vaccines in those places.
No, they don't. So what
and
are
I mean,
doing
so they
that?
I have
dead?
To say just out of the half of my head, there's not that many that are vaccinated.
Exactly. So what are we doing? Because a lot of people who get across the border, once they cross the Rio Grande and they come into the United States, quite often they're already put on buses and they shipped all over the country because a lot of people who come across the border know where they want to go, whether it be Maine or Arkansas or Idaho or New York, wherever, and they know where they're going, but they're not inoculated. So what are we doing? Aren't we spreading this thing as well?
Well, I think all you have to do is read the New York Times every day about how it's spreading across the country. Now, somebody's spreading it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be people coming into the country not vaccinated or who have the disease and don't know it.
Exactly.
But I mean, the screening that is done at the border when they do screen can't be that great.
No, I mean, look, when they come in, when people come into New York City Airport, they're supposed to be screened at wherever they come from. And,
yes.
And then if they're okay, then they can get on the plane. But then there are some people that could be asymptomatic, and so they could still come into the country and nobody would know.
That's another policy in the New York metropolitan area alone, which we do not know the status of it. That's what they used to be doing. I assumed it was continued. I don't know if it has been continued to screen them and quarantine them if they test positive, or if the 14-day quarantine in New York area is still in effect. I don't know.
I don't think they would be able to allow it to continue, because where are they keeping all these people for 14 days?
Well, if they lift that, that is simply a convenience for the people coming in, because you have to have some place to stay anyway. So you have to go to wherever you're staying and stay in that place for 14 days. Whether it's a hotel or a relative or whatever. I don't see it's a problem to quarantine for 14 days, particularly with New York City cases going through the roof. In fact, Nassau and Suffolk counties are really high, too. They are the leaders of the outside New York City. They're the leaders, Nassau and Suffolk, and then Westchester. And New York City, another problem.
Is there any rationale? Do we understand why these things are happening in certain parts of the city or the state? Why it's happening? Is it because people are not wearing masks? Is it because of something else? Is it because they're old?
A lot of them aren't vaccinated.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly, there's no excuse for that in Nassau and Suffolk County. I mean, and Westchester.
None.
There's just no excuse.
None.
I mean, and It is a the state has done a lot to try and promote the fact that the vaccinations are healthy, and I do not understand the reluctance. If people want news channels and right wing media to rule their lives and their destiny and believe what they want to say, they are making a big mistake. Because they're just businesses making money. They're just businesses making money. They don't care about you. And you have to realize that. It used to be you ran a news operation because you wanted to bring out the truth to people and maybe make some money at it. But as soon as money starts taking over the focus of your news operation, so does your news coverage.
That's very true as well. So it's very likely that we're going to people who don't get inoculated may end up dying, and they may be infecting I don't know how many people during the time that they were alive. So I don't know how we're going to put an end to this. Well, I want
it's
to ask
not going to end anytime soon.
I don't think so either. Too many aberrations and mutations taking place. I want to ask you about one thing which really floored me. The Westchester County Department of Transportation, they've changed the exit numbers on the Hutchinson River Parkway. And it doesn't make sense to me what they did. And I think you pointed it out. They don't even have, like, if exit 2 exists, they don't tell you if it's going south or north. So how do people know where to go?
That's really what you want to know. If you want to go to a place that's east of the road you're traveling on, you have to know which exit take, because there's always two directional exits. And the fact that they are not putting them on the signs is beyond belief. But this is really ridiculous. Of all the problems on New York State roads, the least of the problem is the exits. The least.
Exactly.
The exits are what they are. Everybody travels them, know them. And the big problem with changing all the exit numbers is the number of directional websites and gizmos and GPS services that name the roads and exits to take when you get directions from them.
Right.
Is the state going to notify all those outfits themselves, or are they just going to do this?
Well,
do they ever do what
they
should do?
No.
They never do what they should do. I mean, that is one of the purposes of government. Never do anything that you absolutely have to. Look the way Biden is ducking voting rights. He's just ducking that issue. He's ducking it, man. And this is wrong because imagine if you said, well, we're going to have to make sure that the ballots from Grosse Pointe, Michigan, one of the wealthiest communities in the United States, are actually voting and not turning in too many absentee ballots.
Mm.
The outcry would be enormous.
Absolutely.
But no. Since the minorities, everybody thinks that they are cheating or wants to, right? I mean, come on. It's hard to vote when you have to travel to polls that aren't exactly in your neighborhood and whose hours are only open during the day.
Right. What about the cost to all the cartographers, the people who make maps and what about the print publications? They're all out of date now. That must be costing us a fortune.
It's costing the Department of Transportation $3 million to do all these sign changes. But that's,
really?
Yes, $3 million.
The benefit allows
you to know how many miles between exits. That's the only benefit that I can see. It enables you to, yes, that is what they said. Now, I put a call into the Department of Transportation and posed the questions, why don't you put S and N by the exits, exit numbers? And I also asked why don't you put in the nomenclature on the signs the direction that you're going to the particular community.
Yeah.
Well, they're getting back to me on that. They have to research it, they said. Please.
Oh, great.
You should have an explanation. That is a very simple question. Two very simple questions.
Well, it's a pithy question. They should have been able to resolve that issue before they made their conclusion. So, I mean, it's so stupid. I mean, you really
no. The Department of Transportation.
What do they get paid for?
No, they should fire that entire department because they've come
Absolutely.
Up with projects and take them for years to do them. Big point, case in point: the Exit 80 interchange at Westchester took 10 years, cost over $250,000.
Mm.
It cost $200 million. What am I saying? And
well,
it hasn't fixed traffic westbound on the 287. It hasn't fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just alleviated back up into the city of White Plains, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, what can I say? But this is what they do. They have these engineers that doodle around and come up with stuff that doesn't work. Mario Cuomo Bridge, another example of a $5 billion project that did not work. It just replaced a bridge with the same old traffic jam because they didn't do
four lanes.
They did four lanes and three lanes. Please.
Well, that's where
that's what
wrong.
The old bridge did. That was what
exactly.
the old bridge did. And they put a bike lane on it and a pedestrian walk. No, you don't need pedestrians on the bridge. You don't need bikes on the bridge.
No.
And but no, this was a touchy-feely thing. They could have added, made it a 5 and 5 lane. But the big problem was, as they never widened the cross Westchester Expressway.
Exactly. Listen, John, unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go. Always exciting. White Plains Citizen at reporter.com or WPCNR.com for short. Have a great week. Thank you so much for your input.
Good luck getting around, folks. Right. Bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye. All right. Well, let's bring in Michael Edelman. He's our next guest. He's the national political analyst and pundit as well. Double whammy there. How are you, Mr. Edelman?
Good morning. Hi, Hezzy. How you doing?
Thank God. Thank God. All right. I just pressed the wrong button somewhere, but I know that we're still on. Let me just make sure. 1 second. All right. We should be here in a minute. 1 second. I'm sorry. I don't know. We may have lost him for some. Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. I just didn't realize I lost.
Okay.
I lost. Yeah, I can hear you fine. I just wasn't sure if something was missing from my end. Well, bear with me a second. I forgot we were going to be talking about the January 6th introspection of what happened. And so can you review that? Because I lost all my notes in front of me right now.
You did? All right. Well, on January 6th, Donald Trump summoned a crowd to Washington to stop the steal. He had a rally down the road from the Capitol, and he urged his followers to attack, essentially, the Capitol. And they did.
Yes.
And the reason, and what they were doing was they were trying to overturn a constitutionally mandated function of the vice president, which is to simply count and record votes that had already been certified by the individual state legislators. Okay.
Yes.
And so the result was that this unruly gang and mob attacked the Capitol. And you got deaths, injuries, and they were looking for Pence, and they said they wanted to hang Mike Pence. They were looking for Nancy. They were screaming, "Oh, Nancy, hey, Nancy," as they rampaged through the Capitol. And so this January 6th commission is formed by the House in order to investigate how it happened, why it happened, and who was involved in it. Some people believe, I think rightly, that there were members of the United States Congress that gave members, gave the same people that were involved in the attack a tour of the Capitol the day before so they could see what was where and they knew how to go about the attack. This whole thing is based on the erroneous principle that the election was rigged. It was not rigged. The election was in all states. They recounted the cases, and they certified it in favor of Joe Biden. So the big lie is being promulgated by Donald Trump as he tours the country in an effort to convince Rob, when in fact 83 million people voted, first people that have ever voted for a presidential candidate in the history of presidential elections.
Well, that's one of the things, too. You've got Nancy Pelosi has put together a panel, but I think that she just was able to get a Republican recently that was willing to join the panel. Why is it taking so long for the Republicans to put up someone in the panel? Wouldn't that balance out the outcome?
Well, they did. But they know Kevin McCarthy nominated five people. One of those was Jim Jordan. And Nancy Pelosi said that two of the five were unacceptable. And when she said two of the five were unacceptable, he pulled the other three members so that there was nobody that was going to. Now, in the meantime, Liz Cheney was picked and Adam Kinzinger was picked, both Republicans, level-headed Republicans, to sit on the committee. So there may be more Republicans, I mean, a number of other level-headed Republicans in the House that Nancy could put on the committee. But at this point, it's only Kinzinger and Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney. Is this all show, pomp and circumstance? You know, the Republicans are trying to give Biden a rough time with an infusion of more funding for infrastructure. Why are they giving him such a hard time? Is the Republican base, do they accept this sort of circumstance? You know, it doesn't make sense why the Republicans are on the other side.
Well,
they don't want Biden to succeed.
That's exactly right. They don't want Biden to be able to claim a win. That's exactly the bottom line. And that is why they are not cooperating with Biden on his infrastructure plan or on anything else he wants to do. The virus is a perfect example of that. Right-wing media and some Republicans are urging vaccine hesitancy, and the reason they're doing it is to deprive Joe Biden of being able to say, I confronted the virus, I beat the virus, we are now COVID, which is...
Well, you cut out there for a moment. We should watch.
The Republicans don't want people to take the vaccine because they want Biden of the ability to say that he defeated the vaccine.
Well, that's the other question. Is it conceivable that even though we're not an autocratic nation like China or Russia, and should we emulate something that's being done like in France where they're saying, well, if you want to go to the theater, if you want to go to a sports event, if you want to go to a restaurant, you're going to have to prove that you're inoculated and that you're free of COVID. Is it something that we would be contemplating or no?
I think we need to have vaccine passports, yes, because we cannot let the unvaccinated control how we live our lives. To be the drivers of what's going on. They don't want to get vaccinated. They want to die. That's up to them. But don't make it impossible for me to function in society, go out to restaurants, go to stuff like that. You don't have the right to stop me from doing that. And that's what they're doing when they refuse to get the vaccine.
And do you even understand why people are reluctant to take the vaccine? I did read there was one inoculation that could cause thrombosis, but to such a small extent, these people could die anyway for all kinds of reasons. So why are we coming up with excuses when it seems that the only way to beat this thing is through inoculation and even to wear masks? Why are people averse to wearing a mask?
Because the right-wing media like Fox News made it into a political issue, which it should never have been. There's nothing political about getting sick. You can't. The virus doesn't decide it's going to attack Democrats. They made something that we have always required vaccines to go to school.
Correct.
You can't go to first grade in kindergarten unless you can prove vaccinated. That's never been a problem. Now, all of a sudden, people like Laura Ingraham and the Newsmax and OAN, right-wing news, are trying to inoculate, if you will, that the vaccine is unreliable, that it was rushed through too quick. You're going to get a microchip inserted in your arm. And all of this anti-government bullshit, all right? All of this anti-government nonsense. So people listen to that and they say, I'm not getting the vaccine. And they don't.
Yeah, but
And what's interesting, though, is that all the people who are getting infected now, not all, not 100%, but predominantly those people getting infected with COVID, one strain or the other, are the ones that haven't been vaccinated. When is it
going to
dawn on people that they're getting sick because they don't have the inoculation?
You have to understand the mindset of people that are dumb. Okay, you have to understand, once they believe something that they hear or see on television, whether or not it's true, that's their position and they're sticking to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, right-wing media has an economic interest in peddling disinformation. Okay, because they want people to listen to their station and not CNN, MSNBC, NBC, et cetera. So they peddle an alternate to believe that reality, and their advertisers spend money advertising based on the number of people that watch that particular show on an alternate network. So they have an economic incentive to lie. They're not a news organization. They won't claim. Sean Hannity doesn't claim to be a newsman. He claims to be an opinion host. And as long as they're
As long as they're what? Dad, as long as they're what? Okay,
like
let's just see what
he...
Yeah, now I hear you again. Well, you know, so this is not going away, but we're going through a, I wouldn't call it a resurgence, but a surge in new cases coming from new mutations of the virus. How long can people who believe the dogma that they hear through, you know, the right-wing media that, like you said, has an interest in just making money with their opinions rather than fact, how long will it take for people for it to dawn on them that, hey, this is not working for me. I'm the one that's dying. My family is dying. When
that's
is this going to start
that's
to split?
It's starting already. The Republican governor of Alabama, Kay Hyatt, already said, let's blame the unvaccinated with her southern drawl. She said, because the unvaccinated are the problem. Okay, you got down in Arkansas who said essentially, as soon as these people see their friends or their family sick, and in some cases dead, they'll decide to get vaccinated. That's going to take about 3 months, I think.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a frightening situation. Okay, well, it is what it is. What about our southern border? Our southern border is evidently quite porous. They don't just come from South America or Central America. They come from Asia. They come from Africa through South America and eventually cross the border. And once they cross the border, I understand if they evade the Border Patrol people, then we can't touch them anymore. So they can travel wherever they want, and they do.
They're
not inoculated either, are they? Do we quarantine them for 14 days?
Well, if they test positive, yeah.
Oh, I never, I didn't know that they tested them. Oh, do we test them?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't know. I don't know that. Well, they should test them if they're going to, if the Border Patrol is going to hold them, they should be tested.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope they're doing that. That would be nice. It would be good.
Well,
another
issue. We have the ability.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I'm done.
That makes sense. They may not have the ability that I can understand too. I know you always talk about national stuff, but it's the lines to the national stuff. Cuba is going through a tumultuous upheaval. People are disgusted by the government, and they're trying to call for a different government. We have a large Cuban population, of course, in Florida. Is that going to cause the United States to enter in some sort of I don't know, discourse with Cuba, or are we just letting it be and shall become their own problem? Because we're not going to get involved militarily, are we? Doesn't seem logical.
No, we're not. Well, Obama tried to loosen relationships with the Cuban government and encourage mm-hmm. tourism in attempt to show them how the other half lives, as it were, if they see Americans
right.
coming in. And Cubans did open a number of businesses. They have an underground capitalist system there. They have people mm-hmm. and food and make clothing, and they sell it.
Yeah.
And the government knows it, but they don't, it's a communist regime, but they don't have a problem with these people in business. But then when Trump
mm-hmm.
got in, because of the Cubans in Florida, he tightened again. Interestingly enough, Joe Biden has not loosened the restrictions that Trump put on.
No.
So Cuba is
mm-hmm.
still suffering under sanctions from the United States.
Okay.
There really isn't anything we can do to change that government, and that's up to the people. Just as Castro came in and changed it in 1959, they can have another revolution.
Yeah, you never know. That's up to them again as well. Well, I was looking at St. Louis, St. Louis is in Missouri, so they're requiring people to wear masks beginning today in indoor public places and on public transportation and so on and so forth. And there's a federal order that runs through mid-September. Are we going to have that going nationwide? Because that seems like a logical place to go, shouldn't it? Because too many people are not vaccinated.
But here's the thing. The president really doesn't have the authority to issue a nationwide mandate. That can only be done by governors. And you see that Ron DeSantis, for example, in Florida, is not allowing any mask mandates. He's prohibiting them
mm-hmm.
anywhere.
Yeah.
So this has got to be it's common sense to understand that if you've got a variant traveling around, you need to mask up even if you've been vaccinated, because vaccinated
mm-hmm.
people can carry the variant, even though they're not sick,
exactly.
even though they're asymptomatic, they can infect other people. So the best way to stop that is wearing a mask. But
absolutely.
It can't be a federal. It can be a federal mandate for federal employees, but not for everybody. There's no authority that I know of that the president. What they should do is mandate vaccines, which they've always done.
Oh, I didn't know they could do. Oh, yeah, they could do that because they do that with polio and other vaccinations.
And small polio
uh-huh.
and smallpox. Absolutely.
Well, maybe you should give them a call, Mr. Edelman. You're the only one that can get through. That sounds like a good idea. What a great idea, actually. So where are we heading as we grapple with another permutation, another mutation of COVID? We're trying to get the economy back working again. The Republicans are not even, they're trying to stifle President Biden's capacity to infuse the economy with investment for infrastructure and stuff like that. He's got a tough road. And is it all that personal disgust? Somehow they just hate him so much that they'd rather hate him and the public is going to go along with it? For how much longer? Is it going to be 3 months or 6 months?
Well, let's understand something. Only 30% are self-identified Republicans. I'm sorry, that's not right. 24% are self-identified Republicans. 30% are Democrats, and 42% are independent, self-identified. So the Republican base is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And that's why all of these state legislatures are trying to curb voting rights for minorities by taking away early voting, taking away mail-in voting, requiring strict
mm-hmm.
identification laws, and essentially extremely difficult for black and brown voters to turn out and vote. Because they know if they do, they lose.
Do you think also the black and brown people, people of color, or particular ethnicities as well, have they gotten it together? Do they realize they need to go out and vote? Because I don't know if the number of people who are now eligible to vote, even if there may be obstacles thrown in their way, have registered. Mm-hmm. What's it going to take for people to register to vote to realize that the only way you're going to get clout and recognition will be through the vote?
Yeah, well, if you look at Georgia, minorities turned out in huge numbers. They stood online for hours and hours and hours. So they're willing to register and vote. And Republicans are just trying to make it tougher for them to turn out by limiting the number of lock boxes that are available in the in each county. So they have to schlep, you know, to one lock box instead of many. They're limiting early voting hours on Sunday or late voting hours on Sunday when African Americans are traditionally in church, so they can't, you know, they can't vote after church. They're limiting voting hours during the week. That's not right. I mean, you should be able to vote anytime you want within 3 or 4 weeks of the election. So they're doing everything possible because they know that the only way they can win an election is to limit Democratic votes. They can't convince them to vote for Republicans because Republicans don't have any policies that are attractive to black and brown people at all. None.
Well, is there any way, for example, well, I guess every state has to designate the capacity for people within that state to vote electronically. As another aspect of how to go about voting, I think in Oregon you could vote through email and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, that has to be done by state.
Yes, can't be done nationally.
Oh, it does. I see. Yeah. All right, so that could take a long time.
Some states don't want everybody to vote. That's the point. You know, states like Arizona and Georgia, they don't want everybody to vote. Far from it.
Yeah. Well, we've gone through a tremendous upheaval, I think, in the national demeanor in the last year and a half. Does it look like that we're starting to change? Are we moving toward a different direction, or is it too soon to tell?
Joe Biden has a 53% approval rating, higher than Trump ever had in his 4 years. 54% believe we are right track, which is higher than under Donald Trump. And I think, don't forget, we're not even a year into the Biden presidency, and I believe this infrastructure bill is going to pass. I think they're going to do the other bill by reconciliation. They're going to spend several trillion dollars, which is time, you know, money well spent. We're a great economy, and we've got roads and tunnels and bridges that are decrepit, that are falling down.
Yeah. Well, what about, like, inoculation? Should one be allowed to travel? If they're not inoculated, if there's no proof, should one be allowed to go to the movie theater, any of these events, baseball? Does that have to also be done by the state, or could that be done on a national level?
I don't know where the national level would get the authority to do that, but states should do that. States should have vaccine passports. You're not vaccinated. You can do whatever. You want to be a libertarian and die, and you want to get sick, you want to have the freedom to choose, you have the freedom to choose, but you do not have the freedom to infect somebody else. That you don't have. So your freedom to swing your hands stops where my nose begins.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Why is that so difficult to comprehend? I never, it seems so logical to me.
and I remember putting on the face mask, even though I have other issues as well that would make me susceptible to getting it. But I thought that the reason I did it was because I thought, well, I don't really travel that much nowadays, you know, because of my condition. So I didn't know if I would need it so much, but I said, like, if I would go outside or go somewhere, I would wear the mask because I wouldn't want to infect anybody else. I thought
that's
that
correct,
was the
but
reason
there are some...
we did this.
Yeah, but you got a lot of people in the country that, number one, think it was a hoax to begin with. They didn't believe it was real. They still believe it's not real. They've told people at Trump rallies this is not real, okay? And they just don't believe it. So if they don't believe it, they don't believe they have to wear a mask. And that's why it's going to take a little time until people see other people die, unfortunately.
How is it that Donald Trump... what is it, like about 6 months after he was out as president? He's been out for about 6 months. How is it that he's still able to hold so much clout and power and sway on the Republican Party? Is there nobody else that could be have a better attitude, have a much more eloquent way of giving expression to his ideas, if it's Republican dogma? Why is he? I mean, he's still pushing the hydrochloroquine thing as if it would work. I could believe that.
He uses techniques that have worked before with his base, and he doesn't care if he's telling the truth. He only cares that they listen to him. And Republicans are afraid that he will support, in terms of the Congress, a primary opponent against them. Same thing with the Senate. They're afraid of him.
There was a woman, I forgot her name now, it escapes me. She was a little bit heavy set. I think her father was in either the Senate or the Congress, I don't remember. And she used to be a spokesperson like Ms. Psaki now.
Sarah Huckabee.
That's it. Yeah, Huckabee. That's the one. And yet she just recently said that she's taking the Trump vaccine. I couldn't believe it. I mean, where did these people come up with this sort of stuff? I didn't know there was a Trump vaccine.
Well, they're giving credit. Well, no, because of the program, Warp Speed, which developed the vaccine. But it wasn't developed by Trump. It was developed by Pfizer and Moderna and the drug companies. It's just that the Trump administration guaranteed to buy hundreds of millions of doses. So that's why they're calling it the Trump. But if it's the Trump vaccine, why shouldn't Trump supporters take it?
I don't get that either. That was the other thing that I was thinking about that too. You took it right out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's the conundrum. If it's a Trump vaccine, you'd think they'd be jumping on it. But they're getting information from people that want them not to get the vaccine because they don't want Joe Biden to be able to claim credit for defeating the virus. That's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line. So that unbelievable bias against the American nation. I'm just astounded that they could hurt their own people.
Well, it's Rupert Murdoch wanting the billions of dollars from Fox, weaving an alternative narrative, and he doesn't care if anybody dies, but he should die. It's time for him to die. He's killing people. Personally killing people. His network is killing people. His two kids will fight it out over whether Fox becomes a legitimate news network or not. They ought to fire Hannity. They ought to fire Pirro. You ought to fire Ingraham and get back to covering the news.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I see Levin just came out with a new book. It's gone through the roof. People are reading it. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, he's nuts. He's a nut job.
Yeah, I know. Well, as usual, it's always a pleasure speaking to you. I love the fact that you're on every Monday. Starts off the week on the right note. All the best to you, Michael Edelman. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Stay healthy. Bye. All right. Well, and now we're going to speak to none other than Ron Matten. Ron Matten is a Republican candidate vying to serve the city of Yonkers as their next city council president. So good morning, Mr. Matten. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing today?
Thank God. Okay. I'm so thrilled that you're on. And there are a lot of issues that you wanted to talk about today. And I'm very appreciative that you'd be engaged in some issues that normally we don't hear about, because many candidates don't speak about the issues they believe in. And I think that would make – that makes a big difference. It's a lot better, it seems to me, to know what the people we're voting for believe in so that we can either align our vote with them or maybe look somewhere else or not vote at all because we can't find somebody who somehow aligns with us. So what are the issues that you find important?
Well, you know, I wanted to discuss drunk driving a little bit, and this is deviating a little bit from some campaign issues, but as many people know, we had a tragic, it could have been much more tragic, but still a tragic incident on Lake Avenue a few days ago,
yeah,
where a drunk driver at 8:30 in the morning turned the corner from Morningside and hit a parked car, and then the car kind of spun a little bit and ran into a woman carrying her baby and went through a barbershop storefront. The baby was under the car. Luckily, there were two officers who had stopped for breakfast at the bagel store, which I believe is one or two stores down. And we're spot on the scene and worked with some of the people in the barbershop to lift the car, pull the oil-soaked baby out. The baby had a fractured skull, and the mother has a compound fracture. The baby has a fractured skull, and the mother has a compound fracture to her leg. I mean, it was a tragic incident. It's alleged that the unlicensed driver was drunk in the morning, and obviously that contributed to the accident. So I wanted, you know, to just, we've had a number of incidents. This is, although no loss of life, still an egregious incident. You don't know if the baby, what long-term effects from that, I think it was a 6 or 8 month old baby,
mm-hmm.
What long-term effects that child will suffer from this accident. You know, it's just, having owned a bar in Yonkers and try to have been vigilant in making sure people don't leave, being the nice term is called overserved, but I'll just call it drunk. I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about that today and how important it is for people just to decide, you know, you can't sit at a bar and drink for hours and then go home. I believe if you, a 180-pound male can handle about one beer an hour without being over the limit, the body adjusting to that. So, you know, that's not really a lot, but one beer an hour is really all you can have. Yeah, that's really all you can have without being drunk or impaired leaving the bar. And it's even leaving home. I mean, we all, you know, go over somebody's house, have a glass of wine. A 5 ounce glass of wine has about the same alcohol as a 12 ounce beer, as an ounce and a half shot of whiskey. So these are all things we have to be mindful of, and that we're not taking a 2,000 pound projectile and running it through the streets of Yonkers or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
We had an incident about 2 weeks ago where there was a Yonkers resident who was drunk going the wrong way in New Jersey. We've had a couple of car accidents in the last month and a half where people have been drunk. Some of them have tragic consequences. Some of them, the people were very lucky. It's also, you know, if you want to be selfish on this, think of your own expenses, just getting pulled over. It could be tens of thousands of dollars to defend yourself for a drunk driving charge.
Yeah.
So, you know,
go ahead, sir. Well, where does society go? Is there anything that can be done on a local level, in a city of Yonkers, for example? Or is that all done on the state level where we could define laws? Are we doing enough? Is the law making it onerous for one to drive drunk?
I recall a few years ago we had a lot more checkpoints.
Yeah, we did.
Police would set up, and you know, COVID may have changed that, but we had a lot of checkpoints. We tend to have some state checkpoints at this point, where you know, around Memorial Day or July 4th,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking for seatbelt laws. But I really think, you know, overtime is warranted to put some checkpoints out there, and not just on the main roads, but on some of the on some of the feeders to the main roads. Which would look?
Yeah.
I recall about 10 years ago there being a checkpoint on the Somo River Parkway, where you were leaving the Bronx and just crossing over that McLean Avenue overpass.
Yes.
There was a checkpoint there. They stopped every car on the highway, and the police would check and let you go if you were not intoxicated, or you passed the sobriety test. I think, you know, people may want to call that government intrusion, but I certainly think it's worth a life or a lifetime of being maimed to try to get some of this under control. Because I do think we're reaching pandemic proportions with the drunk drivers out there right now.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Seems like every year it's gotten worse and worse. You hear more incidences like that. But is there anything that anyone can do about this? Do police have to have more people out on the roads? Do we need to have more places for, you know, like you said, on McLean Avenue, you know, getting on the sawmill? You know, why don't we do that? Is it just too expensive to do that?
Well, again, it's I'm not sure it's that expensive when you compare human life, and plus there are still ticket opportunities. You know that. I'm not a big fan of checkpoints, but in this case, I think it's warranted to try to curb it, the curb to drunk driving, as well as I think a whole education program would be necessary too. Some public service announcements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing that with the police recruiting. I think we can also do that with drunk driving. Stay home. If you want to drink, stay home or take a cab. Uber is very prominent now. It's very easy. Bars can lose their licenses. If this incident determines that the alleged drunk driver had come from a bar, that bar can be sued for this, as well as possibly losing your liquor license. I know it's very hard to control your customers when they're leaving, I've had it where we've taken keys away from customers and they have a second set of keys on them. So it's not always easy, but you know, good bartenders will not let people leave drunk, and I know it's hard to do with a busy, profitable bar. Restaurants make most of their money on liquor.
Yeah, I always wondered why, if you would enter a bar, you know, before you got your drink, you had to put, you know, fork over your keys, you know.
Yeah.
So this way, you know, you wouldn't be able to go anywhere, because the bartenders usually know. They remember what they're giving you. They also
have a tally. You know, my best bartenders knew our customers by what they drank.
Yeah.
You know, so before the person even walks in, you know, they've got a VO on the rocks, you know, or they've got a Budweiser up on the bar, because they know that's what that person drinks. Look, I think bars can participate too if saying, look, if you come in with somebody who is a designated driver, the designated driver will drink, you know, soft drinks for free that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go,
that's a great
incentive. If you go to a bar to see a band, you know, bands are coming back. We're coming back to play to venues to watch live acts. I think it would be a good idea if you go as a group and somebody's the designated driver for that group, and they drink for free, they can enter for free, you know, maybe even they get an appetizer because they're the designated driver.
I think it's a great idea. Great idea. What other thoughts do you have that would be pertinent? But before we even go there, like this whole issue of drinking and driving and people who lose control of their vehicle, and who knows if it was because of drunken driving or some medication that they were taking or forgot to take. Is there anything that could be done about that, or is it just strictly a police conduct?
Well, again, I think there needs to be an education campaign for it, because I'm a big proponent on people taking responsibility for their actions. So, you know, I don't go out, and I know my limit, and I have one beer per hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I feel when I get off that bar stool that one beer per hour was too much, I'm going to call a cab. I'm going to call a friend. Make sure
mm-hmm.
that I have a way home.
Right.
It's you know, not only can you ruin your life, but you take other lives at risk when you get behind a 2,000-pound projectile.
Yeah, I can't imagine, you know, someone. Well, I never heard that the limit was like one beer per hour for a man
of
180 pounds.
It depends on you know, how quickly your body will go through that alcohol. I knew a forensic pathologist who worked at Jacoby, so she was a medical examiner,
mm-hmm.
and the bodies would come in, and that's what she had told me, was that between 160 and 180 pounds, body will use up that alcohol in about an hour. So,
mm-hmm.
and that's not a lot, you know, that's not a lot. If beer drinker, or, you know, if you like something on the rocks or a shot, you know, that goes very quickly in an hour. Even a 5 ounce glass of wine.
Yeah. It's truly amazing. And what other issues that you find pertinent that people should know about?
Well, again, I'm running for Yonkers City Council President. I'm running because I'm concerned
mm-hmm.
about, although we have no tax raises this year, we have had 15% over the last 5 years prior to this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just concerned that the money's going to the right spots. I'm happy that we've hired some positions in the school within our school district, but I'm also concerned that we'll have ample funding for that once our state and federal funds dry up from COVID. So I think we have a 2-year guaranteed funding for these positions. So we're going to have to make right, and we have no choice but to keep maintenance of funding for the school district. So once we raise that funding, we can never go back down. That doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
the positions are guaranteed, because, you know, everything goes up. But I'm hoping we can keep the positions, and then we have the school district, who is independent of the council, really will need to make some decisions on how we can continue to have guidance counselors and
mm-hmm.
Social workers on staff that we need. So those
what do
are
we
good.
Do?
Go ahead.
No, what do we do about what?
No, you said what do we do? I'm waiting.
Oh,
I
was wondering if there were standards that need to be incorporated so that we know what our actual costs will be at the Board of Education or other departments, or does that vacillate from year to year based on
how much revenue comes in. How does one decide all these things?
Well, I know that the police have been working, you know, I'm just going with the city now. The police have been working without a contract for a few months now, and they're going to want to come to the table and negotiate a raise. You know, I'm sure that the Yonkers School District contracts will be coming up as well, CSEA, the Teachers Union. And these are all, these have all been champions throughout COVID, trying to make the best. I mean, you know, there were some stories of teachers working other jobs, not willing to come in, or administrators, but those are one-offs. I think for the most part, the teachers, CSEA members, have done a great job in trying to maintain education for Yonkers students. Police department, fire department have all done a great job in coming in during COVID and trying to keep us safe. So, you know, they're going to be making some big asks, and we either have to negotiate well as a city and a school district, or we're going to have to find ways to make those asks work. As I stated in previous interviews, I'm a student of lean principles that have been used by companies like Toyota for making sure that when we do something, we do it once and we do it right, and we don't redo it every time we redo something because we didn't do it right the first time. It costs additional money. So if we can, you know, when we fix something, when we pave something, if we can be there once, we can do it right and not come back, we might be able to find enough savings that we can pay for these
things.
Well,
can that be done in government?
Oh, government does it all the time. It's really meeting what the customer needs more than just making sure we have jobs for people or idle jobs for people.
Well, who is
the
customer? Well, who is the customer?
The taxpayer, the homeowner, the attendee, the school child, the family, any resident of Yonkers is a taxpayer. I mean, is a client of city government.
Right.
Whether we tend to use them or not, my trash gets picked up three times a week. I'm a client of DPW, and you know, they do a great job. They pick up. I've had no issues. I see the guys out there on the truck. Is there a way to make the routes better? I don't know. But look at what FedEx and UPS have done. You know, they have these AI programs developing their routes, their delivery routes, so that they can be the most efficient and save the most fuel. That's an example of some lean programming that enables the route to be more efficient without causing additional work.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that they did that. That's very, very smart. And can those sort of modalities, can they also be inculcated into a government like the city of Yonkers? Is it hard to do? Are other people doing it?
I think it can. You have, if you take all your departments and you look at some department overlap and decide whether it's better for, let's say, the parks department or the school district to take care of school district grounds. So when I was in Greenwich, I took care of the school's facilities, but the parks department took care of my grounds. So I was a client for the parks department, and I didn't need to have a separate grounds crew to maintain the grounds because I didn't need to have separate machinery. I didn't need to have separate training. All of my grounds people went over and became part of parks. And service was great. I had a great working relationship with parks. And then the parks department had the opportunity to rent out the school grounds after school hours to make some of their money back for taking care of the school grounds. So it was a very good relationship. And we eliminated one entire – we didn't eliminate one entire grounds crew. Parks took ownership of one entire grounds crew. What we did – was we made the management easier. I didn't have to know anything about grounds maintenance because I had experts in the parks department to do that for me. So that's the kind. So we didn't eliminate hourly jobs that way, we eliminated management responsibilities, which meant I was able to take on responsibilities for construction because I no longer needed to take on responsibilities for grounds.
That's really very compelling. But that
so
needs to be
I
learned. Where did you learn all of this stuff?
Well, again,
most people come into political office and say, I want to be, and they just want the honor, they want the pay, but they don't have a clue on what to do. I'm no dummy, but I couldn't do what you talk about.
Well,
I don't have the expertise.
I've had some great bosses in my career. One of my bosses at the town, when I worked at the town of Greenwich, he's now the town administrator. He's the one who brought lean practices to Greenwich. When I worked for Columbia University, I had a gentleman there who was retiring, Harris Schwartz, but every Wednesday during the summer, he would bring in somebody from the Columbia Business School, and we would spend 6 hours in the conference room, and we would learn new ways of doing our business. We would learn about blue skying, flow charting. We learned about lean principles. So these were all ideas that were being developed at Columbia Business School that were available to the staff. And that was when I was in my early 30s. So Harris Schwartz was a great mentor. Ben Brannion at the town of Greenwich was a great mentor. My last job at Hunter College, I worked for a woman named Lori Mazur. Previously, she was vice president at NYU. And she brought a lot of she was very good at messaging. So I kind of learned messaging from her. So these are all bosses that I was able to learn something through my 30-year career and take little pieces along the way with me.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So did you realize the trajectory that you were on, or did it just seemingly happen organically and there you are and now you can vie to represent the city as a council, as a city council president? That's huge.
Well, I've always been involved in politics to some degree, working on various campaigns. I didn't see myself as a candidate until about a year ago, where I started to look at I looked at the budget negotiations a little earlier than that, but I really started to look at the budget negotiations. The questions that were being asked, and I felt that I could do a little better. I could do a little better in pulling apart the budget documents and going through what was needed and doing so on a cost-per basis. So not really looking at the overall number, but breaking the overall number down into little chunks to see, you know, how those funds are utilized. And by all means, I'm not saying that Yonkers is doing a terrible job at this. I just feel that I can bring a little more to the council. I bring a different viewpoint. You know, we have some fine people on the council. Anthony Moranti is a CPA. I think Tasha Diaz does some great things in getting food, getting things out to her community. And being a representative for our community. So everybody brings a little something different to the council, and I think that I can just accentuate that with my skill set and operations. Because I would be the only person on the council who has managed a department of over 300 people.
That's amazing. I don't know how many people work in the city of Yonkers all told.
Well, it's more more than 300. But
more than 300.
It's more than 300. But again, I have that expertise with large staffs, large crews, and multiple reports. You know, Mike Breen and John Rubo were business owners. So it's, you know, it's just that they all bring something, and then adding me to the council would just widen their diversity of thought.
And do we need that?
Oh, we absolutely do.
Diversity?
The more voices on the council from different perspectives of life, I think it's better. I think it's great, the makeup that we have now. We do have a lot of people who have different backgrounds, have had different upbringings, and understand their constituencies. So,
well, do they represent them well?
even though you would think that they would be able to verbalize some of the sentiment and the demeanor of a particular district or community. Because I don't see
well,
that.
I think they try. Now, my different way of looking at it, I don't start at the beginning of the problem. I try to start at the end of the problem. So I look at the outcomes and I determine what outcome is most beneficial. Let's take the housing discussion for a while. We're looking at a 20% outcome for increasing housing. The council right now is starting with that 20%. I'd like to end and say, how do we get to 20% rather than just saying we're going to demand that every developer come in and give us 20%? That may or may not provide you the number at the end of the equation. That's going to provide you 20% from anybody who decides to build at that 20% number and whatever incentives Yonkers has to throw in. So any incentives that Yonkers throws in comes out of the pocket of the taxpayer. So I'd rather look.
But doesn't
okay,
it come? Does it always come out of the city of Yonkers when a developer comes in? Who's subsidizing that 20%?
Well, so the YIDA.
Assuming
the
that's the number.
The Yonkers Industrial Development will do some borrowing, and will provide some incentives. They could be tax incentives, various incentives for people to come in.
Mm-hmm.
When that 20% number goes up, we need to provide more incentives in order to make that palatable. I believe New Rochelle is at 14% and White Plains is at 12%. So if I were a developer, I would be looking at places where I can squeak out a little more margin of profit before I come to Yonkers. So I'd rather say, okay, what's the gross number of houses we need? You know, what do we need at the end of the equation? Is that 2,000 more affordable houses? Is that 1,500? Is that 10,000 more affordable housing units? And then how do we get there? By just saying 20%, and if you say 20% and now half the developers come in at that 20%, we're at the same number we would have been at 10%. So
how do – go ahead.
I'm not sure front-loading the 20% is where we need to be, rather deciding how many units we need at the end of the equation and then working our way back. You know, maybe we start by saying 12% and then offer some other funding streams or offer some connections with block grants or offer some ownership opportunities with block grants.
Well, wouldn't that be taking money out of the block grants and putting it into housing?
It could be now. So, block grants or community block grants are really used to serve blighted neighborhoods to get rid of that blight. And if you've got some areas of abandoned buildings, and you can use that block grant towards leveling those buildings and getting a partnership in there where it's maybe 40% city and 60% developer, you might be able to lever that, say, with something like West Ham, and you'd still be talking affordable housing.
Yeah, but would it be at 14%, 12%, 20%? And how many people can we get in at 20% in affordable housing as opposed to 14% in affordable housing? Do the people that live in Yonkers or want to move to Yonkers, can they afford to pay the 14%, you know, or the 20% discount? Do they earn that much?
The 14 or 20% is not the discount, but it's the number of affordable units.
Okay, but then you have to qualify for that, don't you?
Right, you have to qualify for that by meeting the average income standards within those groups.
Right.
And that's also set off in the legislation. I believe they've lowered the average income standards, which is fine. I have no issue with changing the income matrix.
So who pays at the end of the day? pays? Is it the developer who pays? Is it the county government that pays?
It's going to depend on how many units are available and how many units
rent. Pick a number. Let's say you got an apartment complex with 200 people, and 20% of that is going to be affordable housing, or 10%. Let's take 10 because that's a number below what we have now.
Right. So 10% would be 20 units on that.
20 units. Who's going to subsidize that 20% when you have a certain maximum you're allowed to earn in order to qualify?
Well,
we're
not subsidizing the income. It's the developer that is subsidizing the difference of the 20% of those units versus the 80 remaining units at market. So let's assume that in a market rate unit would be $3,500.
Okay.
And that an affordable housing unit would be $1,600 for the same unit.
Okay.
So that difference would be on the developer to subsidize, and what makes the developer want to subsidize is the type of tax incentives that the city of Yonkers would give to the developer to build there.
So that you're talking about the IDA giving the incentive. So the IDA is underwriting the difference of that 20%.
Right. And essentially with hand in hand with the city of Yonkers and the taxpayers. So the IDA would need to make that building profitable for, you know, for the developer. And that would be taking those units.
What do you mean it's going to make it profitable? If it's not profitable, they're not going to build at all.
Correct.
I don't understand. What do you mean if it's not profitable?
So
if they're building a unit of over 100 units and 10% or 20%, whatever the number is, they have to design where the affordable housing component is going to be profitable at the end of the day when they include all the whatever the percentage is for affordable housing and the rest of market rate or even
right.
Section 8 housing. So what's the problem for the developer? Can't they figure this stuff out, or they don't know?
Well, they can.
I could tell them 2 seconds flat. I don't understand why they're concerned. Or do they want to build in White Plains? Go build in White Plains. If that's what you want, you could pay 12%.
It needs to be profitable to operate, and part of your operating is amortizing the cost of the building over the life of the building. So there's a lot
Everybody's got the same thing, whether you advertise for market rate or whether you advertise for market rate of 80% and 20% at affordable housing. You know, these things don't make sense to me. I don't understand. It's either affordable to build or it's not affordable to build where there's a profit margin for the developer. And if it isn't, they're not going to build.
Well, exactly.
So evidently, they're not doing so bad right now, you know, paying 14% in the city of Yonkers when there's they're doing
Yonkers
12% in West Lane.
Yonkers is currently 10.
Didn't realize it was 10.
Yeah, Yonkers, the current requirement is 10%. Market housing, and again, we may be saturated. As I don't know this, but you tell me that many of those units are not rented.
They're not rented
down by the
waterfront. Is not rented. It's Section 8 housing. It started years ago. What do you think?
So
was it 66 Main Street? It's Section 8 housing. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Right. So you know if we keep building and we don't have people who want to come to Yonkers, then it's not profitable for anybody, including affordable housing. You know,
exactly.
What ultimately happens, it's easier for a developer to go bankrupt and start anew than try to salvage a property that's not working out for them. And I've seen it in Riverdale with many buildings,
yeah.
And then they went co-op. So that's something we also don't want, because then the city is left with that building as they go bankrupt. So,
yeah.
Hezzy, I'm going to need to jump off now. I've got a.
Oh, I didn't realize it's so late. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay,
I appreciate it. I always enjoy the conversation with you.
Well, thank you. I enjoy listening to you very much. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Have a great
Bye-bye.
Day. Oh, before you go, how do people get in touch with your campaign if they want to?
Oh, I have a website. It's Ron4Yonkers.com. And all my contact information is there, and you can reach out to me there.
Terrific. Thank you so much. All the best.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Okay, well, let's see. We've got an opportunity to look at a few things probably as we end. I didn't realize it was already 11:35, 36. So bear with me a moment as I do a couple of other things for you at the moment. We'll see how things go. Oh, listen to this. This is like a real shocker. The Lebanese billionaire, his name is Najib Mikati, has been picked as the new prime minister designate. France announces aid conference for Lebanon as Hariri abandons his bid to form the government, and Lebanon's economic crisis requires them to fight food insecurity amid the shortages. So this is very, very compelling, and it would be phenomenal if he takes it on. Well, leading Lebanese businessman Najib Mikati secured enough votes in parliamentary consultations on Monday to be designated the next prime minister, raising hopes for an urgently needed viable government to tackle a crippling financial crisis. Mikati said on Monday he would work to form a government and implement a French plan to save the country from its crippling financial crisis. Well, I don't have a magic wand, he says, and I can't perform miracles, but I have studied the situation for a while and have international guarantees, Mikati said, after he won a majority of votes in parliament, in parliamentary consultations, to be nominated. Well, France's plan includes a government of specialists capable of initiating enough reforms to attract foreign aid. Mikati, who has been prime minister twice before, and unlike many Lebanese leaders, does not hail from a political bloc or dynasty, received 72 votes out of a total of 78 of 118 members of parliament. So like the previous nominee, Saad al-Hariri, he now faces major challenges in navigating Lebanon's sectarian power-sharing structure to secure agreement on a cabinet equipped to address the country's financial meltdown. So while Lebanon has been run by a caretaker administration for nearly a year, since a huge blast devastated large parts of Beirut, its currency has collapsed, jobs have vanished, and banks have frozen accounts. The economic freefall is Lebanon's worst crisis since the 1975 to 1990 civil war. Hezbollah, the heavily armed Shiite Islamist movement that the United States deems a terrorist group, nominated Mikati in Monday's consultations, and most of the main parliamentary blocs endorsed the choice. So today, with signs that hint the possibility of forming a government, that's why we named Mikati to give an extra boost to facilitate forming a government, Mohammed Raad, the leader of Hezbollah's parliamentary bloc, told reporters. Among Mikati's endorsers was al-Hariri, who abandoned his effort to form a new government last week after nearly 10 months of failing to agree its composition with Aoun. And Hariri told reporters after meeting Aoun that he hoped Mikati, a telecoms tycoon, would be chosen and succeed in forming a cabinet. The country has a chance today, he said. Well, the news of Mikati's likely designation boosted the Lebanese pound on the unofficial parallel market earlier on Monday, where dollars changed hands at around 16,500 pounds compared to over 22,000 at the height of the deadlock over the government. That is a huge turnaround. In Lebanon's Muslim political system, rather, the post of prime minister has to be held by a Sunni Muslim, while the presidency is held by a Maronite Christian, and Western governments have been piling pressure on Lebanon, one of the most heavily indebted states in the world, to form a government that can set about reforming the corrupt state. They have threatened to impose sanctions and said financial support will not flow before reforms begin. Well, I guess it was pertinent for the world stage to give a referendum, take it or leave it, and there's not much you can do, but that's sometimes what happens. This is very interesting. In Tunisia, clashes have erupted outside parliament after Tunisian president ousts the prime minister and suspends the legislature. Go figure. Now, we may just have to save this for you till tomorrow because it'll take too long to cover, but at least you're aware of that. Oh, look at this. The French Parliament has approved a law requiring COVID pass for restaurants and travel starting in August. Wow. It's called a Certificat COVID Numérique, European Union. The French Parliament approved a bill early Monday that will require a health pass for access to restaurants, bars, trains, and planes from the beginning of August. All venues accommodating more than 50 people already require proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID-19 test, including museums, cinemas, and swimming pools. France's parliament approved a law early on Monday requiring special virus passes for all restaurants and domestic travel and mandating vaccinations for all health workers. Both measures have prompted protests and political tensions. Well, President Emmanuel Macron and his government say they are needed to protect vulnerable populations in hospitals as infections rebound and to avoid new lockdowns. Well, the law requires all workers in the healthcare sector to start getting vaccinated by September 15th or risk suspension. It also requires a health pass to enter all restaurants, trains, planes, and other public venues. It initially applies to all adults, but will apply to everyone 12 and older starting September 30. Well, to get the pass, people must prove they are fully vaccinated, recently tested negative, or recently recovered from the virus. Paper or digital documentation will be accepted. The law says a government decree will outline how to handle vaccination documents from other countries. The bill was unveiled just 6 days ago. Now, lawmakers worked through the night and the weekend to reach a compromise version approved by the Senate on Sunday night and by the National Assembly after midnight. Rules can be applied through November 15, depending on the virus situation. Macron appealed for national unity and mass vaccination to fight the resurgent virus and lashed out at those fueling anti-vaccine sentiment and protests. Well, about 160,000 people protested around France on Saturday against a special COVID-19 pass for restaurants and mandatory vaccinations for health workers. And many marchers shouted liberty and said that the government shouldn't tell them what to do. Well, visiting a hospital in French Polynesia afterward, Macron urged national unity and asked, quote, "Is your freedom worth if you say to me, I don't want to be vaccinated, but tomorrow you infect your father, your mother, or myself?" Well, he said protesters are free to express themselves in a calm and respectful manner. He said that demonstrations won't make the coronavirus go away. He criticized people who are in the business of irrational, sometimes cynical, manipulative mobilization against vaccination. Among those organizing the protests have been far-right politicians and extremist members of Parliament's Yellow Vest movement, tapping into anger at Macron's government. And more than 111,000 people with the virus have died in France, which is registering about 20,000 new infections daily compared to just a few thousand earlier this month. Concerns for hospitals are resurfacing. These are the issues, and they are going to impact us as well when we have the resurgence of new viruses that are coming out, new mutations. It's absolutely unbelievable. One second. Well, this is very interesting. In Myanmar, the junta has canceled the results of the 2020 elections won by Suu Kyi's party. Myanmar's junta on Monday canceled the results of 2020 polls, election polls won by Aung San Suu Kyi's party, announcing they were not free and fair, end quote, almost 6 months after deposing the Nobel laureate as in a coup. So investigations have uncovered more than 11 million cases of fraud in the elections, in which Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy trounced the military-aligned opposition. The junta's election commission had said they, the NLD, attempted to take state power from the non-NLD parties and candidates by misusing COVID-19 restrictions, said Commission Chairman Tang So. It was not free and fair. That is why the result of the 2020 elections canceled. He did not say whether fresh polls or fresh elections in the country of 54 million would be held. So we're going to have to see where all that goes. But it doesn't look like they're giving up. The military is just not going to give up. Now bear with me a moment here. Okay. Oh, this is very interesting. In the Kremlin, Russia blocks the Kremlin critic on Navalny's website. So Russian internet watchdog Roskomnadzor has blocked a jailed Kremlin critic, Alexei Navalny's website, which is Navalny.com, as well as 48 websites of people and organizations affiliated with him, Navalny's team said on Monday. Well, the move comes just weeks ahead of a September parliamentary election and follows a court ruling in June, which approved prosecutors' request to declare organizations linked to Navalny as extremists, effectively outlawing them. Close Navalny ally Leonid Volkov said on social media site Telegram that the team would soon explain how it plans to sidestep the blocking. Well, Navalny, President Vladimir Putin's most prominent domestic critic, is serving a 2.5-year jail sentence for parole violations he says were trumped up. His jailing has strained Russia's relations with the West, which has demanded that he be freed and criticize the extremism ruling. Well, Navalny's team is promoting the so-called smart voting strategy to back the ruling United Russia Party's strongest opponent in every constituency in the September election. It's going to be a mind-blowing game, that's for sure. One second. Well, this was an unbelievable event. Evidently, France has upset the United States in the men's basketball, with Fournier leading the way in Tokyo. Unbelievable. Who would have expected that? So Evan Fournier from France scored 28 points, sank a three-pointer in the final minute of play, leading his team to an 83-76 upset for the star-studded U.S. squad in men's basketball on Sunday in Tokyo. Unbelievable. And listen to this. A 13-year-old Japanese woman wins the inaugural women's skateboarding gold. Unbelievable. Momiji Nishiya became one of the youngest individual Olympic champions in history when she won the inaugural women's skateboarding gold at the age of 13 years and 330 days on Monday. Nishiya finished ahead of Brazil's Reysa Leal, who at 13 years and 203 days, Kota becomes the youngest ever individual Olympic champion and Japan's Funa Nakayama, 16. Nishiya starred in the trick section to score 15.26 and gave the hosts a clean sweep of the street discipline as skateboarding makes its Olympic debut. Her performance mirrored that of Japan teammate Yuto Horigome, who won the men's title with a stunning sequence of tricks on Sunday. I'm so glad to become the youngest Japanese gold medalist in my first Olympics. Tears came to my eyes, Nishiya told reporters after receiving her gold. And skaters each have two 45-second runs on the equipment and five shots at a one-off trick. Their best four scores out of the seven make up their final score. I was nervous on the first run, but I was not nervous later, Nishiya had said, adding that she wants to claim a second gold at the Paris Olympics in 2024. But first, to celebrate her victory, she will go and eat at the Beef Barbecue restaurant. Very exciting. And she definitely earned it. do we have here? I think that... I think we're fine. This is interesting. Didn't realize this had taken place. It seems that Israel has reduced the Gaza fishing zone by half after incendiary balloons have caused fires. Well, Israel on Sunday reduced by half the fishing zone off to Gaza, defense officials said, after incendiary balloons launched from the Palestinian enclave caused fires in the Jewish state. It has been decided to reduce the fishing zone in the Gaza Strip from 12 nautical miles to 6 nautical miles. The Israeli military branch responsible for civil affairs in the Palestinian territories, the COGAT, had said. The decision was made following the continued launching of incendiary balloons from the Gaza Strip towards Israel, which constitutes a violation of Israeli sovereignty, it said in a statement. Gaza's ruling Islamist group Hamas was responsible for all activities within the Gaza Strip and all actions originating in the Gaza Strip directed towards the State of Israel, Kogat had said. It will therefore bear the consequences for the violence committed against the citizens of the State of Israel. Earlier on Sunday, Israeli firefighters said they extinguished brush blazes in 3 points in a small area in the Eshkol region, noting that investigation had determined the cause as being incendiary balloons. Well, the balloons are basic devices intended to set fire to farmland surrounding Israeli blockaded Palestinian enclave. Well, the balloons are basic devices intended to set fire to farmland surrounding the Israeli blockaded Palestinian enclave. On July 12, Israel announced it was re-expanding the fishing zone off Gaza and allowing additional imports into the Palestinian territory in light of the recent security calm. Well, the fishing zone and import are used by Israel to push or reward Gaza for the security situation. Well, an 11-day conflict in May saw Israel launch hundreds of airstrikes on Gaza and Hamas fire thousands of rockets in Israel or to Israel. And prior to the May conflict, the Gaza Strip was 15 nautical miles, but Israelis reduced it to rubble. Okay, so that's the situation there. Well, that's all we have time for you today. We'll speak to you tomorrow. And thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Be well and goodbye. Let's just see. There we go.